All right, we will now begin our City Council study session for Thursday, June 29th. Again, I acknowledge that Councilmember Winkle is absent and excused. The first item on our agenda for this meeting is to review items on the agenda for our July 3rd council meeting. So if you could please refer to that document. First several items are liquor license applications and purchase contracts. Any questions regarding the purchase contracts? Agenda item 5. Mr. Thompson, the item you wanted to discuss, is that under 4? 4F. Thank you.
I did have a question on 4F. It's for the landscaping extension, the three-month extension. And when I asked for details on this one, it was because there was... we knew the contract was going to be coming due, but we wanted to ask for a three-month extension so that we could get all of our contracts for landscaping services to fall within a January 1st start date or something of that nature. And my concern is only is if we have do we want to look at staggering those contracts, or do we want all of them to hit it at one time? Because my concern is if you have multi-million dollar contracts on landscaping and they all hit at one time, that's a big big hit on your budget.
Good morning, Mayor. Councilmember Thompson, thank you for your question. Our thought process is that in having the contracts expire at the same time, that we might get an efficiency or an economy of scale in how the bids come in. You're correct in the sense that we would encumber funds for, you know, the contracts as they're approved by council. However, we don't prepay the entire term of the contract, so we're paying monthly invoices, essentially. So I don't see the expiration dates of the contract having an impact, whether, you know, they're staggered across the year or expiring on the same day. We're still paying invoices every month. So we're confident that from a budgetary standpoint that this will work. We're just wanting to make sure we have consistent language across the different contracts, and maybe we find some efficiency where one contractor comes in and is able to bid and be awarded multiple areas of the city.
And so would the contracts be then, are you looking for the contracts to blanket the entire city versus, like, this one's only for districts 1, 2, and 5? So are you looking to do the contracts blanket across the city for economy of scale, right?
There would be flexibility in how the award is made. So it could be multiple awards or it could be a single award.
Okay.
It would depend how the proposals come in at that time.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional questions regarding agenda items, any of the purchase agreements under agenda item 4? Item 5 is taking action on various resolutions. 6 is approval of ordinances. And currently off the consent agenda, under agenda item 7 are a public hearing on an annexation case. Looks like it might be the same, a couple of annexation cases. All right, any questions or concerns about Monday's meeting? If not, the next item on our agenda is item 2, to hear an update on Mesa's homelessness and discuss and provide direction on next steps for joint planning, action, and performance measures with Mesa's homeless service agencies. Good to have with us our Deputy City Manager Natalie Lewis and Housing Director Liz Morales. And Mark, thank you for being here as well, quarterback for Mesa United Way.
Thanks for having us.
You bet.
Thank you, Mayor and City Council. As the Mayor just mentioned, I'm joined today by Liz Morales, our Housing and Community Development Director, and Mark Young, who is our President and CEO at Mesa United Way. And we're really here as a follow-up to the City Council Strategic Planning Meeting. And there was some discussion that we had at that time and some interest by Council, because you've been hearing about some concerns in the community about homelessness and really wanting to understand what is happening in Mesa, and getting a little bit more insights about how we can maybe potentially in the future measure our success in a way that makes the most sense. So that's why we're really here today. So today we will be sharing kind of an environmental scan about Mesa and what we know today as it relates to homelessness and the intervention tools and resources that we already use. And then we're also going to talk to you about next steps. because we feel we need more information. And in addition to that, we think we can collaborate a little bit more, especially with our on-the-ground agencies and city staff departments that work regularly in this area. And they know the most about homelessness in Mesa because they're dealing with it. And there are also many of them in the audience today here just to listen to the discussion and kind of support this whole thing as we move forward. So those are the two things that we'll do is environmental scan, talk about next steps. Before we get started, Liz and I just wanted to give you a couple of background types of information very briefly just to kind of set the tone and talk about some of the definitions that we use in this. A lot of people look back. There's lots of reasons why people become homeless. And many of them are listed right here on this slide, but you know these are some of the most common reasons that people just have emergencies in their lives. They've lost a job. Maybe they don't have a steady income. The rising rents that are out there cause them to not be able to make those payments. They get evicted. Maybe they have bad credit, so it's hard for them to get reestablished into new housing. We also have people that have mental health issues or substance abuse issues or people who are trying to escape domestic violence. So there's lots of different situations. This is a very human issue. Every situation is unique. And so dealing with this issue is there's usually a lot of different answers and a lot of different interventions to make sure that we're covering the full gamut.
So I'm going to discuss some of the terms that we use very commonly in homelessness with our providers and with HUD. The first one is chronic homelessness. That really is a term that HUD defined as unaccompanied or single individuals who've been homeless for at least a year or longer on the streets or have had four episodes of homelessness within the last 3 years and have a disabling condition. The purpose of that is really to be able to prioritize resources and try to address chronic homelessness. The way we've addressed veteran homelessness as a priority, chronic homelessness is definitely a priority on the federal level. And so a lot of our funding that we get from HUD does earmark that population. But we do know we have a lot of people who also are not necessarily chronic, but have been on the streets and for extended amount of time and have various issues. The other thing to mention about the chronic populations, we know that they often can be very expensive to our various systems, our police, our jails, our hospitals. And so to be able to address those first really help address a lot of the economic impact that we have. Then we have our families, which often are the most difficult to identify and find. But they do show up in various places throughout our systems and have a tremendous amount of vulnerability when they're homeless, whether they're going from staying from place to place in their cars or in other places that are not meant for habitation. So we definitely are very concerned about those families. Our youth, which we typically say are 18 to 24, are typically aged out of the foster care system, a large percentage. And so we do see that as a growing population. I know even when we recently did our point in time count, we saw a few of those in Mesa. And then we have those who we call the unstable housed, those who are also at risk at the next day of being able to be on the streets or in a shelter. But those are the ones who we might be going from home to home, family members, friends, and they we often call them couch surfers. So, but those often don't meet some of the programs or the financing capacities if they're meant for homelessness. So those are just some of those terms that we'll use when we're talking about different funding sources. If we look at who we're serving in Mesa, when I say in Mesa, by our Mesa providers, here's a quick snapshot. I asked for numbers served in April, in the month of April. You'll see 1,043 single individuals. Over 700 of those were at Paso Cristo alone. Those are self-declared if they're homeless based on kind of a definition that the volunteers will ask them. But, you know, we have a significant number of people that we're serving in Mesa's families and the youth and of course, our veterans. But just be aware that because we surveyed several Mesa agencies, there could be some duplication in these numbers. And there's also, again, maybe an inconsistency in defining homelessness when they're declaring that. But for the most part, we do believe these individuals are homeless.
Excuse me, Liz. Mr. Luna has a question for you.
Vice Mayor.
Liz, tell me what agencies are currently serving our homeless population.
So we're going to go through a slide that kind of highlights them, but just off the top of my head, A New Leaf, Community Bridges, Save the Family, Paz de Cristo, Mark Community Resources, Lutheran Social Services,
House of Refuge.
And I think those are a lot of the agencies that we surveyed.
And are they at capacity currently, or?
They are definitely constantly serving people every month. So I would say they are at capacity.
I'm sorry, Mr. Thompson.
Liz, can you? This is an April 2017 survey of providers. Do we have any document, or do we know what last year this time frame was for the homeless population, or what you're seeing in the population?
Mayor, Councilmember Thompson, I will say that we didn't compare to a previous year, but our providers are really indicating a steady stream. I don't know that some of them may be able to share with you today if they're seeing an increase. I think one of the things we have found just that we are seeing different numbers in different places now. So whether that's overall increase, I will say that in our last meeting, Paz de Cristo indicated that it's been very steady for them, that they haven't seen necessarily a surge, but very consistently the same kind of new numbers coming in every month. But our providers are probably best to answer that question. We can come back and
because I guess my concern is, and when you talk to public safety, they'll tell you, a lot of them will tell you that it's the, you know, the light rails bringing homeless in from other communities, and with the economy turning around, I would expect the numbers to actually go down. But if we're seeing a surge, I was just trying to figure out is it truly they're coming in on light rail, and how do we stem that flow so that we are taking care of the folks in Mesa?
Mayor, Councilmember Thompson, I will say we're very interested in understanding that better ourselves, as far as whether it's truly a surge because of the light rail or not. I don't know that we have enough information to make that determination right now.
Mr. Luna.
As a follow-up to Mr. Thompson, I know we have navigators, right?
Uh-huh.
They go out. Are they working along with the light rail? Because I'm hearing that from public safety as well, that we're getting a lot. There's an increase of, at which appears to be homelessness coming in into the Mesa area. And do we have, are these navigators attempting to identify whether they are indeed homeless? And then are they being directed to some of our agencies?
Yes. Mayor, Vice Mayor Luna, two things. We're going to be talking about our navigators because it's a very robust system, and it's something that we really rely pretty heavily on today on an on-the-ground type of an intervention. So we'll talk a little bit more about those next. But secondly, one of the next steps and that we are going to be recommending to you as a body is that we can do a better job working with all of these agencies to combine the data that we already have and know, and to start really kind of diving down into it to better understand what's going on, as Liz talked about. And then also working with each other to figure out, okay, when we're using our resources, are we making sure we're maximizing them? And how are we measuring? You know, how are we measuring outcomes in Mesa? And so we want to have that dialogue, but we want to do it beyond the city and the city boundaries. We want to do it with the people that are actually providing the service.
Okay, I'm sorry. Before we leave that slide, Natalie, this April 2017 mm-hmm. survey, that's not the point in time survey that
it
we're
is
talking
not.
About. It's something that the city did.
This was an informal survey that we did with some of our major providers just to get a sense for you today what's happening in Mesa.
Do you recall what the point in time survey number was?
Mayor, we did count close to 100 on our survey, but I don't have the published number because what our regional Maricopa Association of Governments does is goes through our surveys and then they identify which ones actually met the definitions of what they're looking for.
Okay.
So I want to say it was around 90 is what Mag, and I apologize for not bringing that with me this
That's
morning,
okay.
But it was close to about 90, which was a slightly an uptick, but not significant. But I will tell you, every year those numbers are all over the place throughout the region, and so it's really hard to use that number as a hard fast number for what the homeless are in Mesa.
So, as you point out, this number might be mm-hmm. off because mm-hmm. it you think there's some double reporting. Agencies are serving the same people.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the last time I asked Arlen this question, I think, Arlen, on a normal night, how many plates do you pass out?
About 300
of positive crystal. Okay, thank you, Arlen.
And I will say Arlen has excellent data, and he indicates, again, about 700 new unduplicated people that he sees through his
About
his
700 unique individuals every each month. Month.
Each
okay,
month.
Thank you.
Okay, so the next slide, we're going to be just talking about some funding that's available towards this issue of ending homelessness as best as we can. Our housing choice vouchers, MESA has been very progressive and with the Section 8 program and provided a preference to serve those who are chronically homeless. And so this has been going on at least 4 to 5 years. Just in this last opening of our wait list, we gave a priority and we've already been able to start addressing some of those who are chronically homeless. Also, our VASH program, our Veterans Affairs Supportive Housing Program, which all of you have been extremely supportive. We have 191 vouchers. We've been actively providing those vouchers to those as those veterans are identified and referred to us from the VA.
Liz, real quick, do we have, so we have more VASH vouchers now? Because I know that at one point in time, we had started sharing those with Gilbert and Chandler, I think. So did we get another...
Councilmember Thompson, we haven't gotten a new allocation. We're still at 191, but right now we about have 180 of those either leased or issued. So we still have, and there's attrition every month. So right now we have about 11, but every month we're getting new, kind of those veterans either move on or something happens. So we have always vouchers available as we're finding veterans right now. We also, HUD is a big umbrella, and they have various funding sources. As you all know, in the last couple months, you approved funding through our CDBG and ESG and Home program for the 17-18 year. It's about $1.3 million that we're going to be dedicating for homelessness. And then the continuum of care is a regional for Maricopa County that HUD gives to the overall regional jurisdiction. Those go out to our individual providers through contracts directly with HUD. And then our human services funds also have been very generous in being able to address this problem in various ways. But we know federal funding can't be the only way we address homelessness, so we're very fortunate to have Mesa United Way, who provides their funding. There's been a partnership with Downtown Mesa Association and the police department to also fund a navigator, which Natalie will be talking about. So there's a lot of innovation that's going on and trying to use our existing resources to better address the problem.
So the mayor has asked Mesa United Way to pull together a coalition of the service providers for the homelessness, to come up with a homelessness solution, or at least a path forward for the year to come. There are a lot of great providers in Mesa and in Maricopa County who are working at this problem, and we do believe that we can come up with some solutions better together. I think there is some wisdom. Of course I do, because the mayor said it. I think there is wisdom to having Mesa United Way be the convener of this. There can be a perception that specific agencies are being self-serving. We know that that's not true, but we do need to avoid that perception. So if we work together and work against our silos, which are pretty natural for us, to come to a conclusion of what would be the best next steps, we believe this is a good group of people. Mike Hughes at New Leaf had started a group a couple of months ago. We've had two meetings, and we have one scheduled for July. I do believe we need to add a couple of other agencies and folks to this group that have some concerns and some capacity to help us deal with this issue in Mesa. So our resources, there are significant resources in town, and here are the numbers. I'm not going to go through all of those for you. Each one of them, however, have specific restrictions. And so whether the restrictions come from HUD or the restrictions come from the agencies or the restrictions come from what seems to be most necessary, there are restrictions. So it's difficult sometimes to find housing for a woman with a pet. And it's difficult to find housing often for women with children. And so there are some things that we need to address and add to this list of what is currently available in Mesa. Again, I want to say we work with a New Leaf. We work with all of these agencies. They do tremendous work. We just have more work to do. So we're going to do that collaboratively and bring you a plan for how we can begin to address this in another way.
Thank you, Mark.
The rapid rehousing, and I know that HUD shifted from transitional to rapid. Is rapid rehousing, is it seriously helping? Because with the transitional housing, you were, you know, there's a plan to take the person from homelessness to success, where they can be self-sustainable. But rapid rehousing is not so much. It's basically taking them off the street, putting them in a house, and saying, here you go. There's a reason why they're homeless or chronically homeless. How do we move from rapid rehousing back into transitional so that the people are learning how to balance a checkbook or how to do the things that we take for granted every single day that maybe they don't necessarily have the skill set for? So how do we move back into the transitional to solve the problem versus just taking them off the street, putting them in a house, and setting them up for failure again?
If you don't mind, Mayor and Councilmember Thompson, I can share that the rapid rehousing is actually very similar to transitional in the same framework in that it's provided supportive services. The difference between rapid rehousing and transitional is that rapid rehousing is like a voucher, whereas transitional is place-based. So because it's place-based, it tends to be a little more expensive. With the voucher, it tends to the rapid rehousing kind of rental assistance, and it's very flexible, so it works with that family for over possibly up to a year and longer if necessary, but it really helps identify where they're at, provides them on-site in their home services, and it also helps them build their rent. So it's in Section 8, we have 30%. On the rapid rehousing, it's flexible based on the family's incomes. It really is meant to step them up to at the point where they can take over that lease. And just recently, HUD put out some new research and data that shows that rapid rehousing is highly successful. I believe they have an 84% success rate. And so that's why HUD is very much pushing rapid rehousing, because the outcomes are showing to be there. And again, transitional has a place in our community. It's done great work. House of Refuge is a great example of that. So I'm a big proponent also for transitional. I think there's a place for it. In fact, I think someone mentioned the other day that now HUD is saying we need to bring back some more transitional. So I think that it's about that continuum of housing, from permanent supportive housing down to the shelter.
I thought last year when HUD shifted their funding away from transitional towards rapid rehousing, we didn't like it because the success rate was 84% the other way, not necessarily 84% in the positive. So that's changed now?
Mayor, Councilmember Thompson, I was not aware that it was the other way. I've always heard that rapid rehousing was highly successful, 84% meaning retention. So again, I'm not remembering what happened at that time and what the numbers were, but currently the most recent HUD report was very, very positive.
Thank you. Mr. Freeman.
Thanks, Liz. I saw Jackie Taylor there kind of moving around, and I had a great briefing from Jackie about the process. And I just want to ask Jackie, is this correct from the rapid rehousing? Do you want to come to the microphone and say anything? Because maybe to answer Councilmember Thompson's question, because I got a lot of great information from you.
Well, thank you, Councilmember Mayor, members of the council. Liz is absolutely spot on. I think when HUD defunded transitional, change is always hard. Many of us, including Save the Family, were rooted in the transitional model, even after we repurposed our HUD grants to rapid rehousing. We continue to fund 26 units through the help of City of Mesa and also a significant number of private dollars, which, by the way, I think we need to give all of our nonprofits credit for the phenomenal number of amount of private dollars that they leverage to make the various funding sources happen. So Liz is absolutely correct. The data doesn't lie. It's truth is always in the numbers if they're being reported accurately. Thank you so much.
Thank you for all you're doing, Jackie. Mr. Luna has a question.
Thank you for being here. I appreciate you being here. You did a wonderful job at Save the Family.
Thank you. Maybe
you want to speak a little bit about the wraparound services that you provide your clients so that the community doesn't think that, well, we just stick them there and then it's done. There's a whole cadre of services that we provide these individuals and these families. I think it's very important that they understand what they are.
Absolutely. And I'm happy to do that. And I will speak on behalf of my sister organization, or brother organization, sorry, my cues. But, you know, we all realized that it's not enough in any type of housing intervention to just put a family, or even an individual for that matter, into a unit and say, now we'll be successful. Because there are very systemic reasons why that family entity or the individual has become homeless. So some of the critical components of our supportive services, of course, getting the stable housing is first priority, but the case coordination or case management is absolutely vital. That's the professional that works with the family to help them pull together their plan for ultimate self-sufficiency. Educational classes around domestic violence, around substance abuse intervention kinds of focus. Financial literacy is huge. Teaching people about budgeting, helping them understand what they can afford. That's particularly critical in Rapid, Councilmember Thompson, because you don't want to put a family in a unit that they ultimately can't afford once you do the step down and they're ready to fly on their own. So career development, placing people in jobs, not just minimum wage jobs, but living wage jobs that can support the budget that they believe they have to afford childcare, transportation, housing, those kinds of things. So all of those costs, I don't know of one of our providers really in our region, but most especially within Mesa, that don't provide those most critical supports, whether it's a transitional model, a rapid rehousing model, or permanent supportive model of housing. We even use it in our affordable housing units. Thank you, Councilmember.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you, Jackie.
That was great. Thank you.
So a couple of the programs that we're also very proud of that we've been able to begin and that you've been speaking to in downtown, and to Councilmember Thompson's point, the Downtown Mesa Association and the property owners and the merchants that are part of that organization have seen an increase in homelessness in the downtown area. You know, and I think they even describe them a little bit as professional homeless, so that these are people that have been around and in the system for a long time, a little more pushy and aggressive, and so it's really, you know, they've taken notice to it. And so the Downtown Mesa Association convened a group of us, and it included the downtown merchants and property owners, but it also included some of our service providers and City of Mesa staff, which was, you know, our police department, our fire department, our courts, our prosecutor's office, the city manager's office, our housing department. So we came together to talk about, okay, what is it that we can do about downtown in particular? We determined that we needed a navigator, first and foremost, because while enforcement is a tool and we need to use it if crimes are happening, we also want eventually to get people off the streets if we can and get them hooked into the services that we have. And so we, through a partnership with the Downtown Mesa Association and the police department, we're able to work with Community Bridges to hire a navigator for a 6-month, 7-month time period, which we're just coming to the end of here, to basically test out how this might work. So during those 7 months, our navigator, her name is Lisa Yazzie, and if you haven't met her, she's a wonderful, wonderful lady. She's got a background herself. She's got a lot of street cred because she can really relate to our homeless out there. But she's talked to 126 about individuals, unique individuals that are homeless in downtown. Not everybody wants help, right? And it's always a readiness factor. But one of the things that Lisa does is she's persistent. So, but at this point, 55 of them have said, okay, I'll work with you. You know, sometimes they don't even give her names. They give her alias names. She's gotten to the point where she's gotten them names. They've, you know, signed releases of information. She's taken them to get their birth certificates or social security cards. She's connected them to jobs that are available. And most importantly, she's gotten 16 of them off the streets. either in our housing programs. We've got a couple that have used Section 8. We've got a couple that are using the project-based vouchers. One of them just went to La Mesita. Just recently, we had a couple of VASH vouchers that are being used, and then others that go to recovery centers to work through usually drug-related issues and to help them kind of move on and transition. So we're really proud of that. And I know Councilmember Glover will enjoy this, but we did remove the benches over in the Morris Plaza because it was becoming a kind of a community gathering space for our homeless, and it really did kind of alleviate a bit of a trouble spot, and that was good. We don't like to take out all of our benches all over the place, but in that particular instance, it seemed to work, and right now we're going to leave it that way.
Excuse me, Natalie. Mr. Luna.
Natalie, it also appears that this might be not only a Mesa problem, but a regional problem.
Absolutely.
Is there coordination with
yes.
other communities in the region
yes.
about trying to ameliorate the situation?
Thank you for asking that question. The veterans program in particular, we've really started to move towards a regional approach there. So as Liz mentioned, we have 191 vouchers, 180 of them are used or assigned. We have 11 available. We've actually housed 150 veterans since the program Housing Our Heroes and the mayor's initiative started back in early 2015. So we've had some really good progress. But there's this thing called functional zero. And basically what that means is as a region, you have fewer people coming into the system and more people getting housed, or at least you're even. So you're never going to get to a point where you have zero people that are homeless. That's just not even a reasonable thing. But you try to get to a point where you have that kind of a system in place so that your system is stable and it's sustainable and it's regional. And so we, Mesa, and with your help, we have actually helped to hire a navigator, a regional navigator, that works in the city of Phoenix. We've all worked, and we're creating this by-name list. So all of the veterans that we know of in our region are now on one list. We started with a list of over 1,000 people, and we've now reduced it in about 4 months to about 600. And now on those 600, we know a lot more about what they're eligible for and where they're at, and we're working the list, and we're working it as a region. And the goal is that we can maybe get to a functional zero by the end of this calendar year as a region, and so we're working toward that, and we would share in that with Phoenix. We have a really good partnership with them. And then I'm going to just very quickly, our departments are also here, and I just asked them, you know, give me a sense of what's happening and the service impacts today with homelessness. You know, and police reminded me, you know, being homeless isn't a crime. And they know that it's a human issue, and every situation is unique. So when enforcement is needed, they do apply it. And they've been working with the downtown property owners and the merchants, and they said, call us. When these kinds of things happen, call us. Most of what they see is things like urban camping and trespass types of issues. They said in January to May of this year, they estimate that they've issued 6 warnings and 14 arrests related to homelessness. And that's throughout Mesa. But they also try to work on alternatives to enforcement. And so they have created good relationships with our navigators. We have a navigator also at Paz de Cristo and, of course, what I talked about in downtown. And they do a lot of transport of getting people to detox centers and recovery shelters. The fire department is more of a medical type of response. They had citywide during the last year about 319 different responses. And most of those are being, you know, they transport people to the hospital, again, to detox centers. Many of them they treat on site. And so the fire department is kind of out there and doing this all the time. Courts, you know, they gave me a 2-year time period because they've got a lot of good data. And they said in the last 2 years, they can point to 1,071 cases that are related to homelessness. You know, and typically trespass is one of the big ones, and they've said that it's starting to rise, and it's a cost to them and to the system. Things like DUIs and drug-related issues and, you know, right-of-way obstructions and those kinds of things are all related to homelessness and types of issues. Libraries and parks are a little interesting because they're places for people to rest, whether you're homeless or not, and everybody is welcome. And so as long as you're following the rules, you have free and equal access to our parks and our libraries. We've done some research for the libraries nationally, and in San Francisco, there's a library that has some social service workers that are actually hired and full-time at the library to, again, connect people to services. In Pima County, in Tucson, they have a nurse, a full-time nurse. You know, and so it brings up ideas of maybe we can partner with our fire medical department in some way or fashion to kind of connect people to services and help them at our libraries. Our downtown navigator is also attending our library quite frequently and has worked with our staff to help them understand how to connect people to services. And then the main library also provides a space for St. Joe's. They have a mobile unit that helps connect people to jobs. And so they come at least once a week and we work with them there. Parks across the entire city sees about they'll see like 5 to 20 homeless individuals a day, and in particular the parks that they mentioned to me are Climb-In Park, which is actually the one that gets the most activity, Pioneer Park when it's open, Evergreen, Stapley, Jefferson, Red Mountain, and then a few down here at our South Center campus. And mostly their response is related to criminal activity when and if it happens. And then last but not least, we've talked about light rail, but transit in particular is another safe place for the homeless to convene. It offers them the bonus of mobility, and you know they can get it at fairly affordable rates. And so, and it's not just us. It's not just Mesa. It's not just the Phoenix region. This is a national issue. And so Valley Metro, though, is taking interest, and they're beginning to engage with us, and we're going to bring them to our homeless committee meetings. But they are right now engaging people that appear to be homeless at their platforms on light rail, at bus stops. And they've created this team type of intervention approach where at the very end of the system, which is an early morning hour when the system kind of like shuts down for a few hours, they're there so that when the people are coming off, they talk to them and they engage. And so they are working to try to do this. So these are all different types of creative uses that our community is really trying to work on. So finally, to next steps.
So we are working to convene our partner agencies and stakeholders. We, like I said, we've had two meetings, and we're going to have another one in July. And we do want to clarify the size, the scope, and the problem. We also want to identify not only the visible, but the invisible homeless, so that we can, that may sound impossible, how do you identify the invisible homeless? But we need to talk about who isn't receiving services that needs that, and then identify the gaps and the needs as we continue forward. It's important that we do work together to do that, Mesa United Way, the city, and every one of the agencies to come up with a plan that makes sense, that meets the needs of the clients as well as the people in Mesa who are, you know, concerned understandably about this. So we're going to come back in the fall with a more detailed plan of a way forward, at least some first steps, to begin to meet some of these needs that appear to be increasing, and we'll have more information for you then.
Thank you very much. Council, questions, Mr. Luna?
I was wondering if I could bring Mr. Butler up.
Maybe he doesn't want to.
Sorry. Well, that's right.
Mark, you could actually stay. Maybe you could talk to us about the impact the CDBG budget will have on these kind of issues that we're dealing with.
Mayor, Vice Mayor, and you know, Liz could speak far more eloquently than I could on this, but Liz, I mean, we all know the profound impacts that cuts to CDBG would have on our programs. That is really for all cities in the region, not just Mesa, mm-hmm. Where we're able to draw down federal funding to utilize and engage programs just like this. You know, we're so limited with our regional and local funding on, you know, priorities, obviously public safety and other areas that we have to work and engage, you know, the city on. And so certainly when federal funding is at risk, it's programs like these that really suffered the brunt of that. We saw that during the recession. Mm-hmm. We saw that when state funding that went to social programs or other outside programs were cut, the profound impact that they had. And we all know the problem is it's more expensive on the back end. Mm-hmm. When public safety has to respond, when Department of Family and Children's Services, when other activities like that are engaged, it's at a much higher cost than if we're able to be proactive on the front end. And so that's why all cities in the state, frankly, are working so aggressively to lobby our members of Congress that, you know, as they're looking at cuts to the federal budget, this is one program that is smart investment for Congress because it saves money on the back end, and that we need to continue to support CDBG on the front side of this and be conscientious of taxpayer dollars in that regard.
Thank you, Scott. So I would like to remind our agencies that they should they should contact our congressional representatives, talk to them about the importance of your agencies, what you do for the city of Mesa, how we work regionally together, to let them know the impact, the negative impact they will have on these programs that we have. It's very important. We can certainly contact them, but your clientele and your agencies will have much more of an impact. So please do that. So thank you, Scott.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Freeman, did you have a question?
I do. Thanks, Natalie and Liz. My question is, are you in a certain area, service area you're going to do this in, like downtown area, or is it going to be citywide?
Citywide.
Citywide. Okay. I noticed that in some of my travels, there seems to be a lot of homelessness around our freeway off-ramps and panhandling and things like that. Is there outreach to those individuals in our off-ramp areas?
Mayor, Councilmember Freeman, I will say that often what we see on the panhandling, it's really difficult to know if they're truly homeless or not. Often, as we, Mark Freeman can share many stories of talking to people who are panhandling, that often they don't really want necessarily the resources, but the outreach, I couldn't say firsthand about the outreach to those on those corners, but that's definitely a question we can ask of Community Bridges and some of the other agencies about how do they reach out to those who are on the freeways. So that's a question we can take to our meeting.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like you to consider that.
Sure.
Thanks.
Yes.
Thank you. This is a great opportunity when we have a lot of the human service providers in our city in one room to say thank you. So I hope that message has been heard and received. I'm fond of talking about what I call strategic or core values that I see in our community. And I think education is one of them and compassion is another. And it's no coincidence that a lot of the very successful statewide agencies that you see doing the heavy lifting in the state of Arizona started in Mesa, Arizona. And a lot of you are in this room, so thank you very much. We are better at this than some of our neighbors. We are noticeably more compassionate, and I don't say that to put them down or to give us inappropriate praise, but I think it is important that we do understand that this is something that's important in our community, and it historically has been, so I'm proud of that. And I think it is important, though, that we, as has been pointed out, as good as we are, we aren't good enough. The problem is bigger than the resources right now. So it's important that we be strategic in the way that we attack this problem. So I'm anxious for us, as I have said on previous occasions, to have a strategic plan when it comes to homelessness. So I appreciate Mesa United Way taking the leadership role in this. I think that's, to me, this is why we have Mesa United Way, and I'm so proud that we do, that we are unique in that way as well regionally and nationally to some extent. So thank you, Mark, for taking on that challenge. And I appreciate the timeline that was shared with us a little earlier. I think I would like to have a strategic plan in place before we go through the next round of funding so that we're not just rewarding people that could walk in with the best ideas, but that they are responding to the needs of our community, where we say, here's what we have. Please come in with a proposal that does this specific task that is the hole in our safety net right now. I think unfortunately, there are holes in our safety nets. If, you know, all of the people in this room that are more involved in this program more than I am will tell you that they daily receive phone calls and are aware of situations that they don't have the resources to respond to. And some of those are from the more vulnerable parts of our population. So I think it's important that we, Mark, and I know you're doing this, we identify who are the most vulnerable people in our community, and are we dedicating the resources strategically there, because we know we can't do everything. So thank you for the great job that you're doing. I do have a couple of questions that are they're just reminders that as we come up with the strategic plan, things that I think are important. We are, as you know, actively involved in activating our downtown again. And I am a big fan of the light rail. I don't want people to think that we have a homeless problem in Mesa because of the light rail. That's not true. There is a transient, visible, chronic homeless population that frequents the light rail. And maybe homelessness is more visual now than it has been previously. But we're a city of 500,000 people. We're part of a metropolitan area of several million people. That's the realities of life. We're going to see that. And we need to make sure that we're utilizing light rail, all the good things about light rail. And, of course, light rail is public transportation, so you're going to see the public. If you go anywhere in the world and get on public transportation, and you're going to see the same cross-section of society. So let's not condemn the light rail for bringing homelessness to our city, because that's not what's going on here. I think Arlen will tell you he's passing out roughly the same amount of plates every night pre and post light rail. But it is certainly having an impact. And it is important because we have that transient, visible population that we do respond to them. That they're problematic, frankly, and I don't mean to be unkind, but they are problematic for some of our goals, like having an active, attractive downtown, having parks that are family friendly and that are attractive to young families, having libraries where people want to bring their young children to engage in early literacy programs. All of those, we need to figure out how to do that, and at the same time, care for those who have rights in our society. So, figure that out for us, will you?
Sure.
In your strategic
plan.
We'll be back
this afternoon.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm excited for Pioneer Park to open. I'm excited for all of the good things that we're doing. I'm excited for what's going to happen in our downtown. And so, thank you for the good work you're doing. All of us, I think you can tell this is something we care about, and we will support you in every way, and we look forward to the strategic plan coming back. Council, any additional questions for us?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. The next item on our agenda is to hear a presentation and provide direction on the city's digital community engagement campaign, also known as Imagine Mesa. Assistant City Manager Carrie Kent, good to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today. Mayor and Council, last February at your strategic planning session, you asked staff to develop a community-wide digital engagement campaign to engage those who live, work, and play in Mesa and provide the City Council ideas on taking Mesa to the next level. A team of city staff, in collaboration with Ideas Collide, who are digital marketing and communication strategists, are here today to present to you Imagine Mesa. Imagine Mesa is an interactive digital forum that allows city stakeholders to share ideas and also to collaborate online. The Imagine Mesa website was created in a very user-friendly manner, which is called Mobile Strategy First, which means the content's easy to read, whether you're on a phone, a tablet, or on a personal computer. Our approach is to bring Imagine Mesa into the hands of our community on online platforms where our stakeholders are already active on and make it extremely fun and easy to participate. Engagement strategies include an Imagine Mesa brand identity with an inspiring message, visual storytelling, and diverse communication strategies that can be used all across our websites, our social media channels, as well as in person to engage participation. We'll be using various analytical tools so we can track user interaction with the website and have information about user experience, the type of content that is the gets the most views, demographic information, and also will tell us the parts of the community we're not reaching. So all this information we're going to look at a weekly basis so that we can redirect our engagement efforts if needed. In addition, that we realize over the next 4 months that we'll be reaching people that have never engaged with the city before. So we really feel this is an additional opportunity to create new fans for the City of Mesa's social media channels so users can become aware of the services, the projects, the events, the activities that are already available for stakeholders to participate in our city each and every day. We're asking our residents, businesses, and visitors to Imagine Mesa starting today with a kickoff event following our study session at 10 a.m. at the Mesa Arts Center. Our launch efforts are going to include a robust social media campaign, as well as a large public outreach effort at the Arizona Celebration of Freedom event next week inside the Mesa Convention Center. We'll be using an online digital engagement software called Neighborland, who has already helped over 200 cities, universities, and nonprofits engage a broad, diverse, and representative group of stakeholders to assist them in their organization. When one arrives on ImagineMesa.com, they'll see five areas that we're calling vision forums. These were created based on your strategic goals and priorities that you discussed last February and March at your study sessions. These ideas could be suggestions on how we might deliver our services more effectively, something that might improve a neighborhood, or specific projects that our participants envision for our community. Our five vision forums include Imagine Mesa at Play, where we're asking participants to share their thoughts on public spaces, trails, arts and entertainment districts, and to the right are just some examples of areas that people could provide suggestions on. Imagine Mesa at Home. We're asking for ideas on how we can keep our neighborhoods safe, clean, and welcoming places to live. Imagine Mesa at Work. Ideas on how Mesa can grow our economy and attract employers of all sizes. Imagine Mesa leading innovation. Ideas for opportunities for kids and adults to learn, prosper, and collaborate. And then our fifth one is Imagine Mesa's Green Future, ideas on how to promote sustainable development and renewable new resources in our community. So if one just wants to view ideas, there's no need to log in. They can scroll through and view the various ideas that are on the site. However, if you do want to submit an idea or comment on somebody else's idea, you can log in with an existing Facebook, Twitter, or Google account, or create your own account. Then you go ahead and you select a vision forum that best represents your idea, enter your information, and click on the Create Idea Up button. If you don't want to submit an idea, you just want to like somebody else's idea, there's actually a Me Too button that you can click if you want to support someone else's ideas. City staff will also be monitoring the site and provide helpful information. For example, if someone puts an idea that they would like to see more household hazardous waste collection activities because they are, as you know, very, very popular. We would like to provide a comment in there saying, thanks for your idea. However, did you know that we're currently under design and eventually we'll be constructing a permanent household hazardous waste facility in October of 2018? So we want to make sure that we provide that information to those participants. There'll also be a focus on ensuring our Spanish-speaking communities are engaged as well. The text on ImagineMesa.com is automated to translate into Spanish, and there's actually a few other languages as well. And then also our videos that we have on our site are closed captioned in Spanish as well. Also, if you type in ihaminamesa.com, how'd I do? It will automatically direct you to the Spanish-speaking website. So it'll automatically translate if you type in that as well. In addition, we're going to have targeted outreach on various social media channels in English and Spanish as well. We'll have some targeted digital outreach. We're going to have digital banners and videos on various websites where our stakeholders are already viewing, for example, some news media sites. And we're going to have targeted social media ads on Facebook and Instagram, also in English and Spanish. We're also going to be using our own City of Mesa marketing tools. We're going to be placing digital ads with a link directly to the site where people pay their utility bills on our most popular websites, the Mesa Art Center, libraries, and recreation. We'll also be doing a lot of cross-promotion on our social media channels. The city manages over 100 social media channels between all our different departments, and we're going to be pushing out on all those different channels that have different audiences that are fans as well. We're going to be working with Neighborhood Outreach on their Nextdoor app. We have over 300 registered neighborhoods that are part of Nextdoor, and we'll be getting information. And you can see some additional assets that we're going to be pushing the information out on as well. We also have city staff ambassadors. These are executive managers that have rotated through the city manager's office that are going to be out and about at city advisory boards and committee meetings, at our signature city events, at your council events that you have. Neighborhood Outreach will be starting these UConnect activities in the fall, and so we'll be attending those as well. In addition, you all in the coming weeks will be appointing a 15-member Imagine Mesa Advisory Committee, and they're going to be charged with promoting Imagine Mesa at various stakeholder meetings to external partners, with the ultimate goal is they're going to be evaluating and prioritizing ideas that they're going to be submitting to you with their recommendations by January of 2018, so that you have information from the community on their ideas during your goal setting and your budget discussions for the 2018-2019 year. I wanted to mention, though, that we really need to set realistic expectations up front with Imagine Mesa. Some ideas that come forward, you might be able to implement with existing resources, but a lot of ideas that are going to come forward are going to need additional resources. They're going to need to work with external partners. They're very complex ideas that could be years before they get implemented, but that doesn't stop us from this beginning stage of listening to the community and seeing the wants and needs of our residents and our businesses and our visitors. So we ask those participants to please be patient as we kind of work through this planning process and hearing the ideas from the community. So to conclude, it all starts with a spark of imagination. We're ready to listen to community ideas and imagine Mesa's future together. So with that, I'll entertain any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Carrie. Mr. Thompson.
You know, when I see this, I kind of go back to the whole iMesa thing from, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. And what is to stop a group of citizens, you know, because I remember with iMesa there was like a continuum of maybe like 20 citizens or so, and they would throw something on iMesa, and then they would vote on it like 500 times, and so that it would rise to the top of the list, and it ended up being what these 50 people wanted or what have you, versus really what the citizenry of the entire city wanted. So how do you hedge that off in this situation? And then also, my other comment is on the economic development side, Imagine Mesa at Work. I struggle a little bit with this because I'm afraid that the ideas that end up coming out of this is I want a Chick-fil-A. How do we really promote diversity of an employment area versus the citizen saying, I want a Chick-fil-A, or I want the QT, or I want... You know, when you're talking economic development, you're really talking job centers. You know, not only the entrepreneur, but all the way up to the Apple, for example. So you're really looking at that diverse workforce that really makes Mesa stable. That are business centers versus just retail.
Mayor, Councilmember Thompson, you do have, you can just like an idea just one time, but obviously if there are a number of people that support the idea, it will rise to the top. Our goal with this campaign is that hopefully we get more people engaged in this than during the last campaign. The last campaign, there wasn't really social media. That was back in 2011. Social media really wasn't utilized. We are really going out and doing a blast and really targeting a number of different people, a number of different demographics and so forth. So if it is a popular idea, it might rise to the top. But at the end of the day, the committee will evaluate that and recommend whether or not that is an idea that goes forward to you. And then you all can decide if that's a worthwhile campaign that you all want to support to move forward. So at the end of the day, if you do gain support from other people, that idea will rise to the top. But there's an evaluation process, and that's something we'll work with the committee on. We can let them know. There is a process that we can, if you have 3 or 4 email addresses at the end of the day, if I am correct, there's a way to... Jeff, why don't you come on up here, that we could verify the information, because we got that. This is Jeff Robbins, who's helped with us on the website. But there's a way of verifying the information if that's the 3 votes are coming from the same person, and that's through the way that we have the analytics behind it. I don't know if you want to talk about that a little bit more.
Sure. So Mayor, Councilmember Jeff Robbins, I'm a management assistant in the Office of Management and Budget. I've been working on this project. So there is a registration system. We are asking everybody to log in. And so hopefully that'll be one way to discourage people from just getting on and clicking and basically filling the ballot the way they want it to be done. Now, people can create multiple accounts. That is true. But we do have ways in the backside. Again, technology has improved a lot since 2011 to find when we have a bad actor, somebody who has created maybe 10 accounts. Again, working through the service, our third-party service that we have, Neighborland, they have identified people in the past in other campaigns who do this. And there are ways in the back end to see if somebody's going in and doing that either through IP or other various means. We don't know a lot of their personal information. Again, we don't want to go down that route as a city, and we can't actually, but we do are able to see from kind of a high end and be able to root those out so that we aren't having that problem you described, council member.
So we do have that. And then we...
Can I say something? Last time, there wasn't... Nobody could vote 500 times. Yeah. You were limited to 3 votes, even under IMESA. So it really all comes down to unique individuals participating, and that's... And I don't think we're suggesting that this is a popularity contest. This is a get as many ideas as we can, take it to the committee... Committee meets with staff, we talk about opportunities, and then the council will ultimately decide if these are projects that move forward. So we don't intend to rank these. Maybe we got into that ranking a lot last time, and so we'll maybe try to avoid that and really just trying to go for programs, projects that will be lasting that the council would be interested in.
And then your second question, Councilmember Thompson, there may be some particular, maybe someone will create an idea that they want a Chick-fil-A. But there's only so much meat we as local government can do. And so, wait, everyone wants a Chick-fil-A. Wow, I didn't realize it's
well,
so popular.
And I guess that's my concern is that, you know, do we set the expectations too high to where somebody says, hey, I want the Chick-fil-A, but we say, you know, hey, we can't dictate that Chick-fil-A comes. That's up to corporate Chick-fil-A whether they move here or not. So there's things that are outside of our purview that we have no control over. And we can
provide that information on there for part of that conversation.
But to me, that's true for all of economic development. You don't really control. All you can do is kind of go after, the folks or market, you know, Mesa to the folks that want to be in Mesa. And so that's really my overall concern is that at the end of the day, we can't tell somebody that they need to move here and be here. And so do we set ourselves up for maybe not failure, but do we set ourselves up for criticism from the citizens that are saying, hey, I want this, but we're not allowed to bring that? That's my concern.
Thank you, Mr. Luna.
Chris. What's the budget for Imagine Mesa? What has been spent thus far?
So we do have a contract with Ideas Collide. It's a 7-month contract that was about $50,000 for all the creative, all the digital marketing, all the where we're going to be directing our ads and so forth, working with our company, Neighborland, as far as tracking the information so that we get valid data that's back so we know who we're reaching, who we're not reaching, and so forth. So we have a 7-month contract with them. In addition, the Neighborland, we did not buy the software. It's a subscription service. And so it's about $15,000 a month. Probably it's going to be a total of about $20,000 will not, be about the...
Not a month. Not $15,000 a month.
I'm sorry, $1,500 a month. So it's about $20,000 total. And then we're also going to be, this time around, we're going to be using some additional dollars to actually pay for ads. So sometimes when you go on your Facebook and your Twitter ad, it comes up. And so Imagine Mesa will come up. And so we're doing some targeting ads and so that we get people to participate not only in Imagine Mesa, but also to create additional fans for our social media websites as well. So those are some of the costs involved with this program.
Did we look and see how much we could actually do in-house? Because I know when we did iMesa, that was entirely staff-driven. And did we go and through and look with our IT staff and with Channel 11 to see what we could do?
And there, and actually some of the, we do have some of our staff that's participating. So the videos and so forth that you see are created in-house. A lot of the staff involvement and the outreach are all in-house. So we all kind of have a team that kind of collaborated on this as well.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Luna.
Gary, I just want to thank you for your pronunciation. Imagínate.
Imagínate Mesa.com.
Great job. But I also appreciate the fact that you've included our Spanish-speaking population. They certainly want to participate. Most Latinos that Spanish-speaking use their cell devices to communicate. This is a way to get them engaged, and I appreciate that you've included them in that. Hopefully, we will encourage them to participate and provide some opportunities for us.
Thank you.
So
that's
much.
The direction you gave us to make sure it's inclusive.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Whitaker.
I just have one follow-up question. Do we own the Pixel? That was the one. The
yes.
One thing.
Thank you for the suggestion. We have the Pixel that is on the site. Yes. There's a whole... As you're aware, Councilmember Whitaker, there's a whole technology as far as where we can find it, especially with our targeted ads that we're doing. We want to make sure, because we are paying for those ads, to make sure that we can tell if we go on a certain website and so forth, we can track that and follow them back to make sure that was working and they're getting back to our Imagine Mesa website. So we are doing all of that to make sure that we can follow the traffic that is happening all around all of our targeted sites and to make sure we're getting people to this page.
Great, thank you guys.
You're welcome.
I think this is great. I think it's important that we acknowledge that this is a bottom-up government. I mean, if it's a top-down city government where the ideas and the what we do is dictated by these the people behind this desk, I mean, we're really shortchanging our community. We're a community of 500,000 people. There's a lot of really smart, talented, engaged people that have great ideas, and we need to hear from them and not limit the ideas and the things that we do to city staff and the elected leadership. So we've got to engage in effective community engagement. And so I'm delighted that we're commencing this campaign. Kudos to staff. I think you've designed a great campaign. We live in an interesting day and age where social media is exploding, and I'm excited for us to participate in that more than we have. And I appreciate the fact that we're not exclusively social media, though. There's a lot of people that are my age and older that appreciate not having it exclusively social media. So thank you for that. I think it's important to remind ourselves that listening doesn't cost anything. I have this conversation constantly with my wife. We sit down and she wants to tell me all the things she'd like to buy and spend money on. And she reminds, and that I find that painful sometimes to go through those conversations. But it's important, I mean, it's important for people like me to realize that listening doesn't cost a dime. And occasionally my wife will tell me something that I say, you know what, that's actually brilliant and we need to do that. And maybe it doesn't even cost me anything. So I hope that we will approach this with open minds and listen to the people that we govern. That's very important. I appreciate the role that the committee is going to play in this, because what we're going to get back from this is a lot of raw data. We're going to get some ideas that we can do nothing about. Unfortunately, we do not award Chick-fil-A franchises, and so we can just respectfully ignore some of those things, or we can educate the population as to what we can do and what we can't do. but on the other hand, there's going to be a lot of things that we haven't thought of. I think we're going to hear from people that say we want more athletic fields, we want more swimming pools, we want more libraries, we want a lot of things that we know we need, but you know, we'll hear a lot of stuff probably for the first time. My biggest question related to this, Carrie, is what do we do after October? Because to me, it seems a little insulting to say, hey, we want to, Mesa, please engage and tell us what you want to do up till October, and then please shut up again. We want people to always be talking to us. And so what can we do to learn from this process so that after October, you know, we don't slam the door shut when it comes to community engagement?
Can I take that one? Mayor, I think that the idea of October is so we can start getting the committee activated. So yeah. We can leave it open if we need to, so we can still talk and listen to the community. But at some point, we've just the timing of when we're going into the next new year, just, you know, planning for budgets and coming up with ideas and having an opportunity for the committee to engage and convene and start, as you said, taking that raw data and then starting to kind of pull it together and trying to identify opportunities. We just wanted to kind of give a run for a period of time for every kind of leave it open so everybody could participate. But at some point, we need to get the committee involved. And that was just kind of a date we picked. Carrie, anything else?
Yeah, that certainly we could continue to leave it open. The other thing we were looking at is creating, whether it's through NeighborLAN or our own website, through our own information technology folks, to be able to create our own website so they can track some of the ideas and so forth, and then track the progress as they go through the committee, what's recommended, what's going to you, what your decisions are, so that we can keep individuals engaged on what's happening with the ideas.
Yeah, I agree, and I understand that I want to have a campaign, and a campaign has a beginning and a middle and an end, and we draw conclusions and we make recommendations. So I endorse that 100%. But I guess what I'm saying is after the campaign is over, and I want there to be a campaign, but after the campaign is over, I want us to still utilize the tools that we have developed. And so if we can give some thought to, you know, Imagine Mesa 2.0 or in perpetuity, mm-hmm. is it going to be an app? Is it going to be a Facebook page? Is it going to be, how are we going to
sure.
be, you know, continually engaged in community engagement
sure.
After this campaign is over? So I guess we have at least until October to keep at thinking about that, don't we?
Sure, we will do that.
Thank you very much. Again, after this meeting, we're going to have a press conference and
at
kick this off.
And kick it off. We're ready to roll.
And we're going to get in front of people as obnoxiously as we can, as often as we can, mm-hmm. in as many different ways as we can, and try to solicit some input to Mesa City Government.
Yep. Thank you. And thank you for your time and your
you
participation.
Bet. Thank you, Mr. Whitaker.
I have one last thing. Where can I get some of those Imagine Mesa fidget spinners?
We'll hook you up. Well, I know some people.
Where's
so
the
we'll
supply
let you know.
Box?
Come to 10 o'clock.
Wow. Okay, I'm coming for sure now.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you. Thank you for your time,
Any
Council.
Additional questions, Council? Okay. Next item on our agenda is item 3, which is information pertaining to the current job order contracting projects. Council, any questions regarding those items? Seeing none, the next item is to hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. I should note that I missed our last Council meeting because I was attending the U.S. Conference of Mayors meeting. I found to be very productive and very relevant to Mesa, Arizona. As has been noted here, that there are national issues that we're deeply involved in right now. CDBG is very much in question right now. The national healthcare debate is actually, in my mind, very much a local issue, because if we have tens of thousands of people in our community that are no longer insured, our public safety folks are going to be the safety net for that. And so as I think cities across the nation are concerned and anxious about what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now. So I appreciated the opportunity to go back and hear from mayors across the nation, and was just struck by the fact that the problems that other communities are experiencing are the same problems that we have here. So to the extent we can steal best practices from them, that I'm anxious to do that. I know many members of the council had a similar experience a week ago at NLC mm-hmm. as well. So. Thank you to those of you. I know we've got a very engaged council. I appreciate people participating, not just at the city level, but at the national level as well, because it's we bring those good ideas back to our city. So thank you for doing that. If there's nothing else, the next item on our agenda is schedule of future meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
Yes, just a reminder, our next council meeting will be Monday, July 3rd. And then following Monday, we'll be having our 2017 Arizona Celebration of Freedom on July 4th from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Mesa Amphitheater Convention Center. It's a free event. I invite everyone to come out. We expect the fireworks to go off about 9:30 p.m. on Tuesday evening. So come on down.
Thank you, Nan. I know it's worth noting that we'll have a Imagine Mesa booth and doing a lot of outreach at the Celebration of Freedom on 4th of July night. So hopefully we'll get a lot of good community feedback during that event. If there's nothing else, I would entertain a motion now to convene an executive session regarding the police and fire memoranda of understanding and a meet and confer policy discussion. Is there a motion to that effect? Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Mr. Luna, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We will now convene an executive session.